RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday, April 30th edition of the Landry Football Podcast and another NFL draft in the books. Hope you enjoyed it out there. Gosh, it is first draft that I was involved in working in the league part-time, albeit 1982. So another one in the books as we go forward with the rest of the process of getting your team better. A lot of focus is on what happened, why it happened, thoughts, this or that. And we're going to spend a little time talking about some things. Time permitting, not going to go through everybody's draft. And if you're looking for a grade, you're going to the wrong place. There's no such thing as a grade of a draft. A grade of a draft comes down years from now. There's no such thing. It's like, truly is like buying groceries. You can buy groceries and go get the best groceries. You still got to cook the meal. The raw ingredients are not going to taste very well. And quite frankly, they're really important. But if you don't do the proper things with them, it minimizes or eliminates their importance. It's the starting point. It is the point of which we begin to develop these players. There is, you know, I often get asked about, well, what teams draft players the best? And, well, if you look at it, the teams that draft players the best are the teams that have the most stability and the stability within the coaching staff. You see, drafting players, evaluating players, and understanding what the critical factors are at each position as it relates to your current coaching staff and evaluating players accordingly and then develop them accordingly, that is the definition of being on the same page. The problem happens is, you know, people change so often, there's so much instability in the NFL that who you draft 1 year, 2 years later, doesn't necessarily fit the new guys coming in. And, oh, quote unquote, they're on the same page, but it's a different book because you're doing things differently. The accountability factors marginalized quite a bit. So we're going to get into that, answer some of your questions. Want to remind you, we had a really good feedback from what we've done at LandryFootball.com. Got a complete breakdown of everybody's draft pick, including free agent signings, everybody's draft class, every team. So you can check that out. We got the undrafted free agent signings. You can check that out. And even a 2020 NFL draft board. No, this is not how they're going to come off the board 2020 yet. These are checklists of guys to this point that have done things that merit being stacked and grouped in certain positionings, but it means nothing. It is not much attention to where that guy belongs in this grade or that grade, because more than ever, it is about because guys coming out sooner and sooner, they have less and less football to this point. So there's less exposure to the player at the college level to this point than ever before. So let's see what they do going forward. But you want to keep an eye out on that. We're going to have that for you. Another note, I'm busy grinding down the tape, spring practice tape. We'll be doing a few things that I think you're going to really enjoy at LandryFootball.com. First of all, our notebooks daily. Keep you up to date on what's going on around the NFL, college football, recruiting, draft, future, anything. We've got that covered for you in our notebook, so check that out. We always do that. But we'll be breaking down rosters. We'll be breaking down on spring practice rosters. Here's what I do now that I've got the draft behind me for the college football fans. We'll break down rosters, spring practice tape, have access to those. I'm not talking about just the spring game. Those are probably less useful, the scrimmages that lead up to that. Also speaking with some of the coaches on the staff to how some things that maybe were not on tape that might be a little bit insightful into kind of what they're doing and how it's going out and how the players look. So we've got that for you. Combined with exposure to tape that I've seen the last year or two of the players. So basically, we'll break down rosters, kind of grade players for you on the college level. We've got what the grades mean and give you an idea, a little bit of an insight, you know, position by position, player by player, a little bit of the skill sets of the players. I think you'll love it. It's the most detail you'll ever see. You're not going to see this in magazines. You'll see, well, so-and-so has five starters back on offense and, you know, and just some generic this, that, and the other. It doesn't mean a hoot. This will tell you about player skill sets, their quality, so to speak, and what their strengths are as players, and a scouting report on them, a little brief scouting report on them. So it gives you a real insight. So I think you'll love it. Listen, I don't know. We're going to get to as many as we can. Of course, you can keep up with our podcast, this podcast, Rush the Field podcast that you can catch on the college football. Also, we've got a pro football podcast. You can check that as well. We also not ready to announce it yet, but for your college fans, we've got something special coming forward with a couple of more podcasts. So check that out as well. You can find it all at LandryFootball.com, and our scouting season sale continues because scouting season is still on. The draft may be over, but scouting these rosters and evaluating these college rosters, and oh, by the way, doing the same thing in the NFL, now that the draft is over, kind of breaking down each roster and how that shapes up and the skill sets of each player, doing the same thing, we're going to get to as many of those as we can, and so we think you're going to love it. It is unprecedented, the type of information and the insights into true scouting and evaluation. You don't get it anywhere else. So that's what we're proud to provide for you. So take advantage of it. Less than a magazine subscription. You want to get on board now. The draft. Overall, how does it play out? Surprises. What happened? Well, going through the initial part of it, I think people look at the top of the draft. And for the recap of the draft, a first round, we certainly came on board and provided a little special audio post on that. But the draft always takes a little bit of a personality of its own based upon how people see players. Now, there are certain players, a small number of players, that are pretty much transformative. Across boards, people see them similarly. People are, you know, they can fit across multiple schemes, but they're very few. The deeper you get into the draft, and we're talking pretty early in the first round, but as you get even deeper and deeper, what you see is the boards begin to scatter a little bit. What I mean by that is, okay, some people like this or that. It's like a buffet. Some people go for certain things in the buffet, and some go for the others. And I'm not talking about just team needs. You know how I feel about drafting for a need. We'll get to that in a second. But what I'm talking about is how you grade a player. It depends upon the scheme you run, how it fits for your scheme, meaning, you know, if you're a man, press man team, and you're not going to like the zone corners. You just, they're not going to be a fit for you. Now, that corner may be a first round, it may be a top 15 player in this draft for a team that wants a zone corner. Remember, I always say the little goofy analogy, you're on a car lot, what do you want? That's what it's about. That's what I think people don't get. How in the world could Greedy Williams and Byron Murphy slip? Couple of things. What do we tell you all along? Defensive linemen and some offensive linemen are going to rule the day in this draft. And of course, you're going to have a couple quarterbacks mixed in there, but it's going to be heavy on that. Receivers took forever to go off the board. Defensive backs, corners took forever to go off the board. That's just the quality of the type of players, the first-round graded players. Pardon me, for the most part, with the defensive linemen. Now, again, if you read other websites and look at other, you know who's a first-rounder, they're going basically off of mock drafts. Well, we think this team needs a corner, so at 14, I think they'll take them. You get falsely believing that that guy's a first round talent because he's in every mock draft that, you know, one mock drafter copies off of another and copies off of another. That's not how it works in the real world of scouting. Who do you think's a guy that can help your team? Okay. Could give a damn about who a mock draft has as it relates to how good a player is. It has zero input. So focus on how a guy fits for you. And that's often different. And here's what I get a kick out of. The people that are doing this stuff, they're not evaluators. They're information gatherers. And they're gathering information from people that are specifically trying to give them false information so that they don't open up the door and the window to what their team is doing. So why would you believe somebody that's purposely designed to throw you out information that is, oh, yeah, I love this guy. Yeah, so-and-so, another team likes this guy. How the hell does one team know what another team wants? They don't. But the media needs to be able to provide some context and provide some content that's going to say, you know, I got this information. I got that information. This is the way. This is what's going on here or there and all of that. It's a lot of nonsense that, again, people put way too much emphasis on as it relates to who's a good player or not. So, look, it comes down to how do you view the player. The other thing is there are teams, against my better judgment, that draft for need, that falsely move a player up the board based upon their need of a position, and that's a problem. It is okay, remember, if players are graded in the same grade plateau, and you know what the grade plateaus are, you see it on LandryFootball.com, it's okay to take a player of need within the same grade plateau of another. So if they're graded equally, then take the player of need, you know, by all means, but don't take a lower grade level. Some teams, no one does that, okay? But what teams do is falsely inflate a player's grade based upon need. So, yeah, they get put into a different grade plateau, but what I always say is what? Grade a player regardless of need. If you don't, then you're going to falsely put a player in a grade category that he doesn't belong. And therefore, you falsely graded a player, and he ends up not being as good. Something that's interesting you should know. Last year, only 47 rookies out of all the 260-some-odd players, plus many, 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 many more undrafted free agents, only 47 players played 600 snaps last year. Think about that. So when we talk about the huge impact these guys are going to have, the reality is most of them are going to play in spot duty, not play nearly up to the 600 snap category, and are going to begin to develop to where you start to see something in the second year, in the third year a little bit more, and then by that time you're able to make a decision on whether you want to give them a second contract. But only 47 got 600 snaps. Think about that. Now, if you draft for need only with a low percentage of the players that played 600 snaps, if you draft for need and pass up better players, that percentage is a lot lower. Yeah, you think, well, Chris, there's a need. So if you draft for need and you plug the guy in, he's going to play more. What happens? You think that. Logically, it's not what happens. What happens is you get a guy in, he's not ready to play, he's not any better than maybe some veteran who maybe is not as talented but is a little bit more trained and skilled, and that guy ends up playing. And so what you end up having is a guy that you drafted for need that can't get on the field because he's not good enough. You overgraded him because he fit a need. Need is not an evaluator. You have to evaluate the player regardless of need. And then if you do that correctly, then you take the player of biggest need if they're graded equally. So we have a lot of reasons why people do a lot of things. Mistakes as well as own personal preference of how they evaluate. Who's right? Folks, you can argue till the cows come home, and everybody does. It's a dumb argument because that will not be determined and graded until a few years down the road. So to back up again, evaluating to a standard, grading players regardless of need, okay, properly setting your draft board. If your draft board doesn't have integrity of regardless of need, then it's going to be falsely graded, and then you'll lead to potential mistakes. Mistakes are going to happen, okay? What you try to do is minimize mistakes by not doing things subconsciously or overtly that are going to negatively affect how you set up the board. So again, the top players in the draft are not the ones you read in mock drafts in that order. That's a generic information gathering. That's the fantasy football version of the draft, which is not reality. So, as it relates to this draft, some people are surprised. Well, there's surprises every year because people, again, are looking at certain things. They're not surprises to me because I know they're things that I'm not going to expect because I don't know exactly how somebody sees a player. There's certain players expect it, and if Nick Bosa would have lasted until, 20th pick, that's going to be a surprise. That means something is up. But for the most part, everything went pretty much as expected. Some guys maybe last a little longer. Well, common sense, if a couple of guys go a tick higher, then somebody else has to fall. You can't take multiple picks. I mean, so understand that. There's some people that look at players, have more concerns about them medically than others. Some people have more concerns about their work ethic, their attitude than others. That is, again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And in a few years, we're going to know who did the best job. But it's not just going to be about who did the best job of drafting, but who did the best job of evaluating. It goes hand in hand. Good developers or good evaluators? Good evaluators or good developers? There is no separation. They work hand in glove. They're together. They're connected. And the ones that are not connected very well, you see flaws in both ends. So it comes down, for example, well, I can't believe a team took a guy this high. Well, first of all, as we talked about in setting your board up correctly, what you have to understand then, and as I explained prior to the draft, you go through about a 10-day process leading up to the draft where you have the draft management part. Where do you think a guy will go? Where do you think that puts a guy? Where do you think you need to take him to get him? All those things are in play. If you like a guy, it doesn't matter if they're 6 or 17 or whatever. You need to secure that guy. And you don't know what other people are doing. You can anticipate based on intel. You've heard me do that in my Inside the Draft Room features on all these teams prior to the draft. There's a pretty good indicator of what you think a team might do. You don't know for certain. No one does. Heck, the team itself doesn't know unless you know with 100% certainty who's going to be there, what you would do. So it is an educated guess. But you can't mess around. If you truly like a guy, quarterback position is the one area where, quote-unquote, reaching is not only allowed, but if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to really have a chance to compete at a high level. This is why the volatility of the quarterback position drives the news story at every draft. If you don't have a quarterback and you don't take one, you're going to get reamed for it. Because what are you going to do without a quarterback? If you overdraft a quarterback and he doesn't make it, you took that quarterback, he's a bust, look who you could have had, it's a disaster. It's a lose-lose situation unless the quarterback pans out. So what do you do? Well, it's not easy to get a quarterback. You can add a pass rusher, a corner, a linebacker, a safety, a guard, a tackle, a running back. You can go and sign a guy for a year out free agency. You don't do that at quarterback. The quarterback position is the outlier. The quarterback position takes you in a different level, and quite frankly, it turns your head. It's like the beautiful woman. It just, you lose all sense of reality because you know you need one, which is why when you grade them, you need to be careful that you grade them correctly. It's not about, well, getting a quarterback of value. You know, it does not matter. I know it's a great storyline that Tom Brady was a six-round pick. It does not matter that he was a six-round pick. What matters is that he's become a generationally great quarterback. Oh, it may matter to him and what his first contract was and the quote-unquote disrespect level in his mind. It matters to him. But the bottom line is he's on your team. It doesn't matter who you took at this spot or that spot. It only matters who you got and to some degree who you could have had. That will follow you. Okay, so I understand that's the narrative, but at the end of the day, it really comes down to, did you get the right players? Did you get enough of them? And are you building a team in the right direction? And along with that is, do you have a quarterback? And the ones that don't, they're the ones that are more likely to reach and make mistakes. We can go through the litany of quarterbacks that have been drafted high that haven't made it. Why haven't they made it? They've been overdrafted. Coaching, you know, they haven't had a lot of playing experience. Coaching instability, all those things contribute to it. Now, where, you know, one begins and ends and the other one starts is debatable, and sometimes the lines are blurred. But that's a big part of it. Stability is going to enhance your ability to have success at that position and at all, but that's the toughest position to learn and play. So we'll see how good these guys can be. I would have a better chance of telling you who's going to be successful if I knew the circumstances of the players around the player and the coaching staff around them. I mean, that could tell me a whole lot about the chances of a guy being successful or not. Since you don't know that, it's tougher. It is a lot tougher. I don't know that Drew Locke's going to be any better than Blaine Gabbert or Blake Bortles. Quite frankly, it's got a lot of similarities. Now, if they develop some stability there, he has a better chance of being successful than either one of those two. If not, he'll be the same guy. Now, oh, man, they took him in the second round. He was a top 10 pick. Drew Locke was never a top 10 pick. If somebody would have taken him there, so be it. But he never was a guy that was, boy, they got a great bargain in the second round. No, they didn't. He was never better than a mid-second round talent. And now we see what he can do and develop. He may develop into something better. It's like people that say, oh, Brady was great. No, he wasn't. Tom Brady was what he was when he came out. What made Tom Brady great is his effort, the coaching he got, the team he was surrounded by, the organization stability surrounded by him, and his supreme work ethic and competitiveness. He transformed his body. He got stronger. He's not athletic, but he moved better. His vision improved. He had the intangible qualities to be great. And so if you're asking me, some of these guys, a lot of these guys have a lot more ability than Tom Brady when he came out. But do they have that heart? I mean, does anybody really have it? If you can come close to it, give me that guy. That guy's going to be successful. So let me kind of talk a little bit about just in general of, well, we could have got that guy later. There's no such thing. You don't know that, okay? You don't know that. And you don't run the risk of losing a guy that you truly want. Remember what I say, when you trade down, you can't trade down for one player. You can only trade down as many spots as you have players on your board that you would be comfortable taking. You can't trade down from 6 to 12. First of all, does anybody want to move up with you? That's the first question. But let's just say somebody does. Well, you can't move from 6 to 12 and expect that you're going to get the guy that you drafted at 6. He's going to be there at 12. Chances are he won't be. He might be. He might not. Probably won't. You don't know. Well, nobody from 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 is going to take him. You don't know that, and you don't know if somebody might not move into that spot and take him. You don't know. Don't fall into the ignorant narrative that media people that don't know what goes on talking about this draft is great and that draft is great. Those people are not going to say anything, nor will they be held accountable for anything that they say down the road. It's just talking point to get you riled up one way or the other, and they've accomplished their mission. We're not here to rile you up. We're here to educate you on about how this process works, and there will be mistakes that are made. There will be people that misevaluated these players, overgraded these players. They're picks that I would not have made if I were pulling the trigger for some of these teams, and a lot of them as a consultant, I didn't, you know, wasn't on board with what they were doing. I don't need to be. It's not my call. So they have to decide it. The other thing I think is important here too, I'm going to go back to the stability of the organization. If a coach, front office, feels, and it's normal to feel pressure if you don't have this success, that you better win now. Or if you're in that, well, you better provide a splash, a spark, or your butt's gone, then that causes you sometimes to make a decision that you would not ordinarily make, but you make because it's the best opportunity to keep your job. We better have somebody that sparks this year or else. You end up making decisions for the short term. That's a hit or miss, boom or bust, likely bust. You're going to get fired, but if you took a conservative approach, you're going to get fired anyway. So let me go ahead and be overly aggressive and do something that maybe is a little bit foolhardy, but what have I got to lose? That's not a well-run organization. I think you need to, as an operation, it's why having a strong football person at the top that can run the organization for the owner is key. So that person can say, Mr. Owner, look, I know you're not happy with the record, and I know the media is on you, but let me just tell you, let me show you why, you know, this coach and this staff has put together some pretty good players, and the arrow is going up, and it's getting up. And if you were to tear it down, we're rebuilding, and we don't know if in 3 years we're going to be as good as you are now. That's why organizations win and organizations lose. Obviously, New England's been the most successful because of stability, but they're stable because they win all the time. So, I mean, it's one of those things. And what does everybody else in the East do? I mean, look at how many coaches have come and gone, and front office people have come and gone at Buffalo, in Miami, and with the Jets since Belichick's been there. They're chasing him. Well, you can chase him, but how about the best way is to find a good football person running the organization that can hire a good coach, that can hire a coach that understands, that kind of meshes with the philosophy, and then you're patient with them. That's the best chance. Nobody has – well, not winning. We got to, you know, stir things up, and, you know, the same people that want to stir it up, and everybody's excited because we got this new guy, and we're going to do this and that. And 3 years from now, 4 years from now, let's fire that guy. Hey, we got this new guy now, and it's the same thing. It doesn't mean that you hold on to somebody that's not doing a good job. On the contrary, what must be done eventually must be done immediately. But you must have somebody that can help you get the hire right and then be patient with it. That leads to bad drafts, bad decisions, bad development, and good drafts with bad development will equal bad drafts. Average drafts with good development will equal a very good draft. Good drafts and bad drafts will not be defined until at least 2 to 3 years down the road. And that's only for the short term. So keep that in mind as you look at these players, as you study them, as you see how a guy fits, how a guy doesn't fit. I mean, Houston. Did Houston reach at 23 and took a player that was, listen, there's no doubt they wanted Andre Dillard. They needed desperately need help at an offensive tackle. They've not been able to – did they reach and leave a better player on the board? Absolutely. If this guy becomes the next Teron Armstead, you know, maybe not in a year, but maybe 2-3 years down the road, if they got their next left tackle, so what did they reach a little bit? They've got a very important piece. The risk of did they find their next left tackle is a lot greater because I'm not quite sure that they did. But if you develop them well, you have some stability, then you've got a greater chance of that pick working out for you. And the quote-unquote hysteria around the pick, you know, calming a little bit. That's basically how I feel. There are a lot of people that had good drafts in terms of where I thought drafted good players to help them. In fact, most people did. Do I think some did better than others? Yes. But who did better than, for example, I'll give you one. I think that the Redskins did an outstanding job in terms of acquiring players. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of developing them. I don't know who's going to be coaching them. I think Jay Gruden's outstanding, but I think they've got some issues. You got an owner that's very tempestuous. I think Dwayne Haskins can be good in time. The problem is they may need to for him to be good right away, and I don't think he's ready for that. Montez Sweat, he's got as much natural edge rush speed as anybody. If he's healthy, he's outstanding. Terry McLaurin can run at receiver. Bryce Love is an outstanding change of pace running back. Wes Martin is a good player that can play guard in this league at a starting caliber level in the fourth round. Rice Persenbacher of Alabama has got versatility at center and guard. Cole Holcomb can be a good special teams player. In the sixth round, Kelvin Harmon, NC State, can be a physical possession receiver. All throughout this draft, I thought they did some pretty good things. Is it going to turn out to be a good draft? Depends. They coach him well. Is there some stability? Is there ownership, you know, involvement that's going to force some bad decisions? Don't know. The Cardinals got some good players in this draft. Kyler Murray is a pick made for Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury doesn't have a measurable success. Kyler Murray, not a fit. They'll be looking at needing a quarterback in the future. Have the Dolphins found their quarterback in Josh Rosen? I said before, I don't know, but I can tell you that my opinion on Josh Rosen is better than when he came out of UCLA because of some of the strides he made maturity level-wise in his work ethic in his first year in the league, and combined with the fact that, yes, it's a second-round pick, but the contract, the capital outlay, the cap room outlay is so little. Keep in mind that the Dolphins will spend just a little over $6 million cap room over 3 years combined, whereas the Cardinals' cap number for Josh Rosen this year is over $8 million. He's going to cost the Cardinals over $8 million this year of cap outlay for a player that's not on the team. Low risk for Miami. I don't know if he's going to make it or not. It's worth a shot. Really worth a shot. Low risk shot there. So we'll see if they've got their quarterback. They've got the Cardinals and the Dolphins probably have the two worst rosters in the league. So quite frankly, neither quarterback's going to have great success, you know. So we'll see. Hold on to, quote unquote, the grades of if you buy all that nonsense. Go back and look at it 2 or 3 years. Doesn't look all that good in some cases. It's the beginning point. It's the launch point. It's not the end point. So we'll keep you up to date and break down all the news and notes and the analysis as these players develop over the years. All right, I want to get to some questions. Kevin asks, about the selection of Titus Howard. Do you think there was frustration in the Texas war room when the Eagles traded up to Grass Dillard? How much do you credit do you give for making this move? Yeah, I think there was frustration. I think Dillard was their guy. I'm very confident he was their guy based upon what made sense to me in terms of needs and value and how he fit, and some intel on it, mostly the former. How much credit do you give the Eagles for making the move? A lot. Knowing where you need to go and get a guy is part of draft management, draft strategy, and they did a great job. Is it plausible that the Texans had Howard and Dillard with the same grade or possibly Howard with a higher grade? No, it's not plausible. Let me put it to you this way. If they had him with the same grade, then they misevaluated him, or they upped his grade based upon need. I think that he was a late second-round value, which, again, that's potential starter, and he still could be a really good player. But same grade, it's possible they could have had him with the same grade. Again, that would be either false grading or inaccurate grading, because he's not the same type of player. Doesn't mean that he can't have as good a career. Well, if you look at it, again, the success of the player is directly correlated to the success of the team, so we'll see. Peyton asks, Mr. Landry, can you explain how the undrafted free agent works? It's crisp. I appreciate that, Peyton. So undrafted free agents, obviously, when you're not drafted, you get calls from teams, your agent, if you have an agent, you'll work through the agent. There is a 2-year superseded contract, minimum salary. You can give signing bonuses depending upon how much you value and how high a grade you had on a player that went undrafted. You can spend money on undrafted free agents. I always, again, this is why people always talk about cap room. Oh, well, I need to spend all the cap room. This is where, let's say you got a guy with a fourth round grade you think could come in and help you. You can use that extra money to offer a little bit more of a signing bonus to get a player that's basically an extra draft pick for you. If you get an extra fourth round pick, everybody's excited. If you sign a player that you have a fourth round grade on as an undrafted free agent, nobody's excited about that. But that's exactly the type of moves you can get. And if you've got some cap room and you've managed your cap, you can go and spend that and find that guy. So you sign that guy. It's a 2-year superseded contract. He's not guaranteed anything but any sort of signing bonus that he would get. And then, you know, he goes and competes and tries to make the team. It's a pretty simple process, but it's a competitive one. I think that as an undrafted free agent, you can pick the team. So if you've got a good agent, they know the league, they know where there's more openings potentially to make a team, and therefore there's a greater opportunity to, you know, if you can make a team and it's a better opportunity there, you're better off going there and not chasing an extra $5,000 that your chances are less to make a team. But that's pretty much how it works. Not guaranteed anything but an opportunity, like any other player. I'd say this, that if you're an undrafted free agent, your chances are less, but you've got to prove it. I think you've got to really prove it from the start. You got to really show something early to be worth making the roster. It's why I'm such a big believer in, you know, scrimmages and training camp and keeping preseason games or allowing extra scrimmages to allow these guys to develop, because a lot of these guys have ability, but they need to be developed. And remember, 31% of an NFL roster comes from undrafted free agents. Look at the number of players that get drafted. Look at, they get 53 players on each team. It's impossible for all the players to be draft picks. It's physically impossible. The numbers don't add up. So a lot of them have to be undrafted free agents, not because they're not good enough, but because numbers-wise, they can't all be drafted. And then some guys get injured, some guys have off-the-field issues and not a really good opportunity and so on and so forth. You find the spot. So it's not the worst thing in the world at all. It's probably better than being the late-round pick is to be a free agent and pick your spot. I hope that Peyton answers how it works. If you want a little bit more, if I didn't hit maybe the thing that maybe you want to know, just hit me back with another question. Here's the other thing that I think is maybe really interesting that people don't know. But when you get late in the sixth round, early in the seventh, your scouts are calling free agents. In fact, you will call guys that you think are going to go undrafted prior to the draft and say, look, Peyton, I think you're draftable. Honestly, I don't know if you will be or not. I hope you are. I hope it's with us. But I can tell you, we like you. We gave you a good grade. It's often a numbers game in the draft. I think you can help us here. It's a good fit. It's a good opportunity. You'd love to work under Coach fill in the blank. And you really do a lot of, you know, soft selling and some degree hard selling prior to the draft. You kind of set the stage. You don't want the player to be devastated he's not drafted. Hope you are, but if you're not, we got a spot for you. We like you. We want you. Then you come back in the seventh round, you call these players again, and you say, look, I'm trying to get you drafted. Really want you. We only have one pick left. I don't know. I may want to go another position, but, you know, I'm trying to get you fighting for you. If not, we want you. And you make sure, hey, stand by the phone. Give us our shot. This is the best place for you. Now, other people are doing that too, so it's competitive. It's recruiting. But you start to sell that so that you pick up the phone after the draft is over, you call those guys, and I'm telling you, within 20 minutes, a guy is decided. So if you haven't pre-recruited him, probably gone somewhere else. It's a bird in the hands better than five in the bush. You better take that opportunity if you get an offer from a team. And here's what I also say. I get you on the phone, Peyton, after the draft, and I'm saying, I want you. Here's your spot. Here's what we can offer you. That's it. But I'm going to tell you, I need to know now because I'm going somewhere else. If you don't, I got to fill out the spot. And you put – because if it's let me see. I'm looking at somebody. You know, they're going to weigh the best option, and you get left. So I'm moving on. And if I sign the other guy at your position, you're out. So you really put the screws on them, and you kind of do that with the agent and you have relationship with agents and you talk with the player. You try to sell them on the idea this is the best fit. And then, you know, that's where recruiting comes in. Hope that answers it. Greg asks, would you have picked Kyler Murray first? Why or why not? I would not have, but it would not have gone down the road with Cliff Kingsbury and doing what they're doing, but considering they're doing what they're doing, I at least understand it. I would not have gone with Steve Wilkes or Josh Rosen last year either, but again, it's kind of difficult when I think that they've not done a very good job in the Cardinals organization for some time now, and I do think there are a lot of things I would have done differently. Greg also asked, how would you evaluate Ernie, of course, as a GM? Work with Ernie in Cleveland for a little while. Ernie is a good guy. Ernie's not a football guy. He never played, never coached. He was a public relations guy in the Colts, and he spent time in college football. Now, he worked in the area. He talks about how he scouted and all that. They didn't really, like he and Gil Brandt of the world, they weren't really scouts in the way that you think of scouts. Back in the old days, they would, like, be recruiters where they would, you know, try to develop relationship with players and sign them, particularly before the merger and all that. Ernie was a personable guy, I think a pretty good administrator. He was an administrator really before the salary cap came into existence. He did was involved in it a little bit with the Giants. He's not a really good evaluator. He talks about a lot about, you know, how he, you know, he – like, I mean, he makes it sound like he found John Elway out of nowhere. Everybody loved John Elway, and he didn't – the owner traded him, but, you know, his fingerprints were on it. He claims that the owner did it behind his back. People that were there kind of say, it's a little bit, you know, misleading. I don't know. I wasn't in that building at that time. But, you know, he did draft the Mike Pagels and the Art Schlesers of the world. The big thing is he certainly had an opportunity with Kozar, and they kind of recruited him. And so, and anyway, I think Ernie did never won as a GM but certainly has been involved in some good things. I mean, they had some success in Cleveland. Even before I got there, and there is some success with the Giants off of some of the things that he did. But that was more of a Tom Boyster running the drafts and people like that with the Giants more than Ernie Accorsi. But Ernie's a good guy, like a lot of people with a lot of ego that likes to tell you about, you know, what he did and then, you know, kind of back off of things that didn't go very well. So anyway, Jacob asks, you said in the post round one podcast that the Falcons selection Chris Lindstrom was your lowest rated guy in the draft in the first round. Looking at your safety grades and you had Darnell Savage as the 13th safety, fourth round grade. Did you change your opinion? Jacob, good catch. Completely forgot about Savage in terms of the first round. That was the lowest guy. First round grade. In my mind, I was thinking Lindstrom, but you're correct. Savage was the lowest guy. Listen, I'm probably low on Savage. In fact, I'm definitely low relative to what the Packers thought. I'm probably low as a fourth round grade, but I think on the upside, he could become a good player, but based upon the grades at this point, I couldn't take him any higher. Probably should have been in that 5-9 grade category. Maybe 6-0. I couldn't take him any higher than that. I don't see that in him. So we'll see what's coming down the road. Do you think Miami's a good landing spot for Rosen? Will playing with Fitzgerald be helpful to him? I do think it's a good spot. Well, I think it's a good spot in this regard. It's an opportunity to compete, and Fitz is a guy that can be helpful in the room. I don't think it's a good spot in the sense that the Dolphins are a bad team, so we'll see. Peyton says, I know you say identify the player you want and go get him. Do you think the Giants could have gotten Daniel Jones later in the draft? Peyton, probably not. But the honest answer is don't know, and no one else knows. And so think about this. Let's say Daniel Jones becomes a better or as good a quarterback as Eli Manning. Is anybody going to care that he was the 6th pick versus the 17th pick or the 25th pick? Of course. If you like Daniel Jones and you're the Giants, of course, if you had a crystal ball and you thought you could get him at 17 or 28 or 37, of course you would have liked to take in Josh Allen and, you know, a couple of other picks and still get him later. Of course you would. But then at what price? What if you lose him? Then what have you done? It's not recruiting. It's a draft. So, you know, do I think they could have gotten him? I don't know is the honest answer. But if you ask me to guess, probably not. Probably not. And I laugh with people. Now, I don't agree with Dave, my buddy Dave Gettleman, saying, I guarantee you, I know for a fact two people would have taken him. Well, you don't know anything for a fact because you don't know for a fact. Maybe a couple of people told you they might take him, but that may be just talk. You know what I think about talk prior to the draft. You don't know that for certain. But as I said prior to the draft, that talk about the Redskins moving up and who they might like and this team might move, that may have absolutely affected or, if you want to say, scared the Giants into, we ain't going to fool around. Look, they're going to be where they took him in the end won't matter. Because if he's really good, it won't matter. If he's really bad, well, it's going to matter because people are going to say, look at the other guy they could have had. But again, if you don't have a quarterback, it's an issue. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think Dave's only issue is he's protesting a little too much because I think, you know, and I get it. You got people that don't know the first thing about evaluating players. They really don't know the game. And this is a guy that's been a part of 7 Super Bowls. And I saw what a great job he did with the Broncos as a scout in helping build some really good teams that went to the Super Bowl. I saw what he did in building a roster that went to a Super Bowl in Carolina. I saw what he did with the Giants as a pro personnel director and the great job that they did in going to a couple of Super Bowls and winning a couple. And now he's back as a GM, and you got people that have never been inside of a draft room and wouldn't know the first thing about evaluating players telling them he did a bad job. Kind of rubs you the wrong way, okay? But at some point, you just got to say, those people don't know, and I'm not going to be bothered by people like that. I pointed out from an educational standpoint for a lot of our fans and our listeners, but, you know, probably Dave needs to let other people make his case for him. But, no, I don't think they could have gotten him later in the draft. We'll never know that. So I can't say that for certain. I certainly can't say, oh, he definitely would have been gone. You don't know. Oh, he would have been there. You can't say that. That's nonsense because you don't know what the hell's going on in other people's draft room. Neither does he. So I don't know. If you like him, you take him, and to hell with the critics. You're going to be judged on how well he is or isn't. Now, I said I would have probably done something different, but that's me. Doesn't make me right. We'll see. Sid asks, hey, Chris, assuming that you will be taking the talking about the questionable, according to pundit selections by Oakland and the Giants in the top 10, will you tell us about what grade you had on Farrell and Jones? Well, I had Daniel Jones with a high second-round value. I said he would go in the first round. I said he would go mid to late first round. In terms of where his likely value was going to be, I had a 6-4 grade on him. Most 6-4 grades, high second-round value quarterbacks, go anywhere mid-first round. I mean, I think Daniel Jones is better than Ryan Tannehill. I think I had the same grade on Daniel Jones as I had Matt Ryan coming up. If this guy can be Matt Ryan, that'll work out pretty good for the Giants. Again, you'd like to think that maybe in a perfect world, if you're just looking at the board and say 17, yeah, that's where you'd like to take him. It would be great if they were talking about Josh Allen and Daniel Jones as the two first picks for the Giants. But because the quarterbacks are overvalued, because you have to take them higher, likely wasn't going to be there. So if you like him, take him, and to hell with what anybody else thinks. And you're going to be proven right or wrong based upon his production down the road. On Cleveland Farrell, I said it before. The guy was the fifth graded guy on my board. Guy's a 6'5 grade. Cleveland Farrell's an outstanding player. He's a plug-and-play strong side defensive end for the Raiders. He'll play for a long time, and he's a very, very good player. Would I have made that pick over Josh Allen? No. Doesn't make it a bad pick. And by the way, that's another example of, well, most people didn't have him in mock drafts until wherever, because I don't pay attention to him, 20s or whatever. Again, if you're basing your opinion on who the best players are because of some mock drafts, that's why you're misinformed. That's why, and I say it every year, I get these questions every year, and I can remember people telling me how dumb it was for the Colts to draft an undersized edge rusher from Syracuse one year. Dwight Freeney turned out pretty darn good. Okay. Because he wasn't ranked high in the mock drafts, you know, so he should have been a late first round pick. No, he should be wherever somebody wants to take him, not where somebody who has very little knowledge about the process puts him in a mock draft. And remember, mock drafts are copied by everybody copies one of the mock drafts, and, you know, it's some combination. It's fun. It's fantasy football. I get it. Enjoy it. Love it. Embrace it. More people watch the NFL draft than watch the NBA playoffs or baseball or everything combined. Great. Just don't think you know, based on what you read, who the best players are and what good value is. There's no such thing. The value is determined by the people that are qualified evaluators, that have all the information on the players and what they liked for their fits for their team and what they perceive as value and what they perceive as the best opportunities to get them. And they will make mistakes as well, but they're going to make mistakes with a lot of knowledge and a lot of information that other people on the outside do not have. All right, appreciate you joining us. We'll be back Thursday to talk a little bit more football as we head into the next phase of this football offseason. Appreciate you joining us.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles quick fix on Radio Influence.
So the Bucks get through their draft. You know, Mel Kiper and all those douchebags are going to go over their draft grades and gave the Bucks a C+. Thanks, whatever. You know, I mean, Mel, I don't know why anybody listens to Mel Kiper. I don't. He's never really said anything interesting to me or relevant. I have a bias against him because he called me camp meat when I was in college, and I didn't care for that too much since I started 9 years in the league, so you were wrong. Sorry, Mel. But, you know, you sit and look at all these draft grades that everybody's getting. Was it a successful draft? The thing is, you know, going back to 1990, and that was a draft that I was in with the Buccaneers, somebody said, was it a successful draft? Well, our first round pick was Keith McCants, okay, who certainly didn't live up to his potential or expectations. I mean, they picked Keith McCants before they picked Junior Seau. And Junior Seau is a Hall of Famer. So obviously that's not the best pick. So you say 1990, was that a successful draft? People are going to look at Keith McCants and say, well, no way. But then as we go down, you'll see Reggie Cobb was after that. Rest in peace. We did just lose Reggie Cobb. In the fourth round, Tony Mayberry was one of the last picks in the fourth round. And we got 10 years, 9 years starting, 3 Pro Bowls out of that. And then in the fifth round was me. And we got 7 years starting here in Tampa Bay. So you just don't look at the first round because the majority of your team is built by second and third and fifth and seventh rounders and free agents. So for me, to look at, evaluate, and give a team a grade right now is useless.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.